Just to start with, if you just say your name and where and...
Is Elizabeth Murdoch, Cruden Farm,
this is the
Cranbourne Road, Llanwarren.
And this is the 9th of September in 2002. Dame Elizabeth, can you tell me how your interest in gardening started?
Well, my mother was very keen on her garden in Turek Road below the village, and it was quite small compared to other properties in those days, but it was an acre. And I think I really probably grew very much to love the spaciousness of it. And then my sister Sylvia, a little older than I was, and when she married into the Ritchie family at Derrotite, Mansfield, and there was already a large garden there, beautiful area, and she made a lovely, lovely cottage garden across the river before moving to the bigger garden. And I think she was my role model. She was she had a very good brain and was a wonderful gardener. And I think probably I was inspired to try and follow her suit.
Was that historic gardens that she was interested in?
Well, it has become a very well-known garden. I think it's going to celebrate its 100th year next year. And I think I had enormous respect and love of my sister. Probably, I think she did inspire me to do my very best to become a good gardener. And I think she was one of the outstanding gardeners of her age. Next, I think in December, there's going to be a memorial lecture in the garden up there, because she was so well loved and so respected. And I think she was one of the outstanding gardeners of her time.
Mm. And why do you think you followed through an interest in historic gardens?
Well, I've always been interested in history, and David Jenkin approached me and really sort of almost bullied me into accepting the idea that there should be an Australian Garden History Society and that I would help to get it going. He was a very forceful person, David, and it was very hard to say no.
What involvement did you have in gardening at that time, before you actually established the society?
Oh, well, I'd helped to build this garden. Mm-hmm. In 1928 we were married, and there was a very small garden here. And Edna Walling had designed the walled gardens, and I had been very involved in making a garden, but she didn't consult me very much. And it was a difficult time because I was not very experienced. I didn't realise that the wall gardens as planned were really not quite big enough. And they were not altogether in the right position. But of course that mustn't be laid at her door, because that was how the land lay. And it seemed to be the place for the garden. But ever since then I've been trying to somehow change those plans so that I could do better in the rest of the garden, and so that I've really been deeply involved in the garden since 1929, and I have a very great feeling for the garden, and I have now a remarkable man. We see eye to eye and we think alike, and I think we have developed this garden into perhaps it's rather arrogant of me say, but it's thought to be a very beautiful garden, and it's one that's always changing, you know. No gardens could be static. You've always got to be moving forward, and I think that gradually it has become a very beautiful garden with lovely environ.
Mm-hmm. And when David Jenkin was encouraging you with the History Society, Why was 1980 a good time for that to be formed, do you think?
Well, I think, you know, there was a tremendous widening of interest in gardens. You know, there was a great proliferation of gardening books. And I suppose that the gardens in England that became open to the public, I think that people who travelled saw how valuable it was to, although our gardens were so much younger, that, you know, we must start to record the history and build it up, because many of the gardens in Europe, you know, hundreds of years old, and we're sort of only beginning our historical life, and I don't quite know who put the idea into David's mind, but certainly there were a lot of people who were really ready for it and were very enthusiastic and helping to get it going.
And can you describe your early involvement with the society?
Beg your pardon?
Can you describe your involvement at the start of the society? Can you describe how you were involved in those early years?
Oh, well, I think I became the sort of first, we called it together, I don't know who, can't remember really who helped us, but we did call a lot of people together, and I was the sort of first, I don't know what they called them, I suppose the patron or the first, and I got it going, and very shortly afterwards handed it over to Joan Law Smith. Mm-hmm. But I've always been very closely interested and in all their records, they always pay tribute to what I've done in the early stages. I mean, that's not the point really, but I think I've always been an enthusiastic person, and I've been probably helpful in getting quite a number of things going, and with my keen interest in the garden, I threw myself into it, and I think it got off to a good start.
Did it have a purpose in the beginning, a particular purpose?
Well, I think it was to start the historical records, to build up the history, the past history, and to look to the future and how it could be strengthened and how it could be recorded. I mean, there was, of course, the Australian Garden History Society Journal, which was very amateurish to begin with, but it's developed into a very good publication now. Mm.
And when it started, was there a sort of a collective philosophy amongst its early members about the preservation of historic gardens?
Well, I don't know about philosophy. I think there was a lot of enthusiasm for starting the Australian Garden History Society. Maybe a lot of us weren't very clear in the heads, but we were enthusiastic and the idea appealed to us. And, you know, it had quite a small beginning, but it didn't take long to get off to a very sound organisation. Mm-hmm. And I very much admire the people who joined up and took the movement on. I think they've done very well. Joan Law Smith was very good for a time, and then, of course, Margaret Darling has been excellent. I'm not too certain who succeeded her. Right. Do you know?
Is that Jocelyn?
Yes, yes, and Jocelyn has been splendid. Mm. Jocelyn Mitchell. Mm. I think that, generally speaking, that the gardening community is becoming very much better educated. Mm. And that's partly, I think, because there have been such wonderful books written and more people have travelled more often and, you know, a lot of gardening tours to the other side of the world. And I'm always impressed as to how knowledgeable so many of my friends and acquaintances are.
You must have been to a lot of on a lot of committees at the beginning, or the original committee. Can you remember who you worked with in those early days?
I'm ashamed to say I don't remember. It's awful. I think I have declining memory, definitely. Probably if I were given just a few names that have come back to me, but I don't remember very clearly who was on those original committees, which is shocking of me, but that's my age. I have to be excused.
Yes, definitely. Do you have any early memories of particularly interesting gardens that you went to see? Or interesting tours?
We had a very interesting tour to Tasmania, mm-hmm. A wonderful tour to Tasmania. I think we enjoyed that enormously. We had another one up to the Blue Mountains of Ayla, where is Mount Victoria?
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a lovely time. And I think...
Why was the one to Tasmania so interesting?
Oh, it's a wonderful state for gardening. And, of course, a lot of those gardens were old, you see, because it was settled very early, but there were some beautiful gardens in Tasmania with a lot of history attached to them. And that's what, you know, I think probably is so fascinating. It's very English Tasmania, I think. Don't you think, you know, it's got great, so much to remind you of England and English gardens.
Can you remember any particular gardens in Tasmania or any particular owners of gardens?
It's all gone.
What about in the Blue Mountains, that tour?
I think we saw the Valda Garden. And there's a famous gardener up there who I became very interested in, and you'd only have to tell me the name, it's simply awful. One of the early, very early landscape gardeners. Now dead, but he was famous. And that was particularly interesting. But the shocking thing is that I could have told you last week and perhaps could tell you next week, but I can't tell you now.
And what about particularly interesting lectures that you would have attended in the early days? Do any of the speakers stand out? Professor Stern was one very popular one, wasn't he?
Yes, that was remarkable. I think we went to the Western District with him. I found a great accord with him, and he really was quite outstanding. And I'm just trying to think of the gardens we went. I've got photographs tucked away where we were, but... he was very good. I always so sad that we didn't have that famous landscape gardener who wrote the book The Education of a Gardener.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you remember?
Yeah.
Absolutely outstanding.
English?
Yes. Oh, yes. It's really my Bible. It's Joan Law Smith's Bible.
Gertrude Jekyll.
No, and of course, you know, we were all so interested in Gertrude Jekyll. I didn't ever go to her garden. But I must cudgel my brains. Can you turn it off for a moment? It's hundreds of years old. And also the Sorby's garden that... That's awful. Stayed there too. But when you have visited those wonderful gardens, which, you know, go back hundreds and hundreds of years, you realise how important it is to record history. And we're so very young here that I think it sort of came, people who had travelled and had those experiences, realised how very important it was that we should start and build up our history.
Mm. Are most of our historic gardens English in theme?
I think they are. I think that it's only recently that the native gardens have become so popular and so successful, but I think generally speaking, certainly in this part of the world, we have concentrated a lot on exotics because we've got the sort of climate that suits them. I've been interested all my life in the Botanic Gardens, Royal Botanic Gardens, Melbourne. I'm very proud to be their first patron. And of course they are such a wonderful, I always think they're one of the gems in the crown of Melbourne. And they go back a long, long way. And I think now the history of the Botanic Gardens has become very important, and in a way it's so related to our private gardens that have that history. I don't quite know, or I should remember, when the Botanic Gardens were first established. Von Mueller was one, of course, and Guilfoyle another. And all that history is so absolutely fascinating. And I think in time, the history which has been built up over our private gardens will be very interesting indeed, especially as, alas, it's not been easy, I think, to develop large and maintain large gardens. I think that gardens are becoming smaller, and it's those fewer, larger, old historical gardens which will be always be very significant, I think, in the history of gardening in Australia. It's such a varied climate. I mean, I know so little about gardening in any other state, but they all of them have things wonderfully that are particularly suited to their climate. And of course the Australian Garden History Society, it covers the whole of Australia, but it's in Victoria, I think, in New South Wales, where it's strongest.
Is there a range of types of gardens, or are they mostly large? Is there a range of types of gardens in the society, or are they mostly large gardens?
No, I don't think so. I think some of them are quite small, but they're historically significant. I wouldn't say that, and there's a lot of Australian garden history deals with a lot with botanical history and botanical art too. So, you know, it's a very comprehensive society which covers anything and everything to do with horticulture.
That could include even vegetable gardens?
Yes.
Cottage gardens?
Yes, I think so. Not as many. I mean, of course, Rosemary Vary's garden in Barnsley House, it had a most exquisite vegetable garden, sort of potage. It was lovely. I don't know that we go so much, although I have seen some extremely well-designed and well-kept vegetable gardens, but I think that it's pretty hard for most people to have the labour to do that. They're very labour-intensive, you know, these beautifully designed vegetable gardens and kept up, and they are really designed largely for their appearance, almost more than their practical use.
How does the society encourage research into plant history?
It does, I think. I don't know how it does, but certainly every time the journal comes in, there's always something very interesting of that nature. And I think that research is so very active in all areas today, and I think there's a lot of research still to be done about our early gardens. But each time we have a journal, I think they're getting deeper in and even more scholarly, you know, in their research, their recording of the history. I'm amazed how very well it's come on, journal. Mm. Mm.
Going back to the earlier days of the society, do you remember meeting any particularly interesting people through the society? Any particular gardeners or owners of gardeners that you've established
in
a friendship?
Australia.
Yes.
I don't think so. I think we've got some very good gardens, but newer gardens, I'm thinking of the older gardens. The Mawalak garden was interesting. That was the Mitchell's garden.
Where was that?
That's up in the Western District, up not very far from Skipton, on from there. I can't think of the name of the number of the address. Mawalak. That's a very well known garden, and that's very interesting. Of course, the Deratite garden's always been interesting, my sister's garden. And
how long have the Mitchells been there?
Not a lifetime. The Russells owned it originally. I think the Mitchells may have been there. I don't know. Unless I can't keep track of 25 years or more, I think. You see now the gardens around here that are interesting. Frightful of me, I can't think of them at the moment. When they had the gardens, open garden scheme. My mind's a blank.
Oh, that's all right, no. In the early days, when you were chairman and president,
It wasn't for long.
No, but were there any particular issues that had to be resolved?
Oh, well, always, you know. I think there are varying views of how things should be done. And I think that's the history of most associations that are formed as they developed. You know, there is a variety of opinion but I think it depends largely on the chairman, on their ability to, they've got to be tactful and kindly and encouraging. And as a rule, I don't think there was any very strong dissension in the Australian Garden History Society. I don't think so, because, you know, you've always got to think that their aims and objectives are so much bigger than sort of personal view or interest. And I don't think there was, as far as I remember, there may have been some sort of slightly shaky times when the funds were not good enough, they hadn't got enough members, or perhaps there would be some dispute as to how the money was being spent. And when, of course, we start the Australian Garden History Society Journal, that was all expensive. And I think everybody pulled and put in a bit of extra time and a bit of extra weight. And I don't think it ever went through any serious trouble. Because gardeners are always very nice people. It's been my experience.
In its early days, did the society mostly consist of gardeners, or were there some academics and some landscape designers,
yes,
botanists?
Everybody. Yes, it was very widespread. It interested, you know, people from all areas. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember anybody who was particularly influential or interested in the society from?
No, I don't remember really that it was.
David Yenkin was obviously one.
Oh, well, he was a tremendous force. Yes, tremendous force, David. Donald Smith was very gentle, but a very influential person. Excuse me.
You mentioned how enthusiastic David Yenkin had been, and also Joan Law Smith. Mm. Professor Turner, was he involved in this?
Yes, indeed, he was. Of course, he was very scholarly, very artistic, and of course, had a great influence on the School of Botany. I don't remember. I knew him a little bit through. He encouraged me to join the Como. I was convener of the Como Garden Committee for a number of years. I don't quite remember relating him to the Australian Garden History Society, but I'm sure it was. Of course, Carrick Chambers was also. I'm sure he must have been in some way involved in the Garden History Society. That I cannot accurately recall, but I'm sure he must have been, because he was he succeeded John Turner at the Botany School and did so much for it. Sorry to be so awfully vague about it all, but as I say, it's such a long time ago now.
No, this is fascinating. Do you remember when Sophie Ducker joined and Ellis Jeffries?
Ellis
Jeffries?
Oh, she was a splendid person, absolutely splendid. Miss Jeffries, yes, she was a great person. She was a great enthusiast, very knowledgeable, and I admire her enormously. And the other one you said was...
Sophie Ducker.
I didn't really get to know Sophie Ducker very well, really. I've got to know her better now. She's a tremendous character and, of course, a great scholar in her particular field. Great scholar.
Did Ellis Jeffries have a garden?
Yes, charming garden. Yes. A charming garden. Smallish garden, but a charming garden. And, she was quite one of the outstanding people.
In what way?
Well, of her knowledge and her taste and her able to communicate, you know. You could always learn from her, Mm-hmm. And, it's a wonderful world, the gardening world, because it does attract such interesting people who help to widen your own horizon so much, you know. As I say, gardening is something very special in their lives, and as a rule, gardeners of either professional or any kind of gardener, they're always rather special people. My own gardener is a very special character. And
can you define why you think gardeners are such special people?
Well, I think they have such an affinity with the earth and the beauty, and this. I think, you know, that there's a serenity in gardening, and you don't have sort of quite the same friction or perhaps difficulty as the other sort of pursuits which people have to follow in their business lives and in their professional lives. I think that the gardening is so serene and somehow contributes something to people's character. That's been my experience. Nearly all the gardening people I know are quite exceptional people, and somehow I never think gardening people are greedy. They're very unmaterialistic, put it that way. Although some people tell me they're very ambitious and very jealous and very quite immoral when they visit other people's gardens and that sort of thing. I've opened the garden here so much, tens and tens of thousands of people, and I've never had the slightest bit of damage done, or anything that was, out of order, pinching things. I've never had anything like that at all. So I think that gardening people on the whole are pretty good.
Now, you were the first chairman.
Hmm.
Were you elected unopposed?
Well, I think probably, you know, David Jenkins managed all that. I think in those days, it was amazing. I think that's something that has changed. Everything today, people were chosen to be. I was sort of chosen by my president to be the president of the Children's Hospital. I'm sure there was no kind of general concurrence of the rest of the committee. I'm sure they were not consulted. You know, the president was determined I was to be there, and that was it. And nowadays, everything has to be discussed and voted for, and there has to be general approval for anybody who's being elevated. But in those days, it was very much unorthodox, but it worked.
And in your opinion, has society fulfilled your expectations?
Yes, far beyond my expectations. I'm full of admiration as to how it's developed. And for the people who, for many, many, many years, you know, bore the heat of day and the worries and the difficulties that come to every association, mostly on having enough money and how it was managed. And I think they've done extremely well. I'm very proud of having had this only just the very early association with it that I helped to get it going. And that's what's so pleasing. If you're able to help, you feel very proud of the way things develop. And I am very proud of Australian Garden History Society.
How do you think it's changed over the years?
I don't think it's changed. I think the same as an objective has always been the same. Mm-hmm. I think they're probably set their sights higher all the time, and they've achieved those heights. Mm-hmm. And that's what has to be in everything, you know. You don't stand still, you have to move forward all the time. And I think that they've been very wise the way they've done it.
And how do you envisage the future of the society?
You can't. I don't think you can foresee the future of anything these days. I just say I travel in hope.
Is there anything you could think would be improved in the society?
No, I'm not close enough to know that. I'm sure that it's, you know, the standards have been very high and they've kept them, and I think that there may be further heights to which they will climb, but I say it's just like gardens. They never stand still. They've got to develop and go forward, and they have to improve. So there's always room for improvement in anything we do in life. And I'm sure that that there will be improvements, and it'll survive as a very important influence in the world of gardening.
Do you think it has appealed to younger gardeners?
That I don't know. I'm not close enough to know the name, I don't know, but certainly other people, I can't tell you that. I think that younger people, on the whole, quite in the ordinary way, are becoming keener and better educated and more capable, I think.
Right. So you envisage a bright future anyway?
As I said, I always travel and hope.
Well, thank you very much.